This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Pete's Coffee and Tea, celebrating 40 years with the arrival of Anniversary Blend Coffee and Tea. Portland locations on the web at PETS.com.
Good morning. It's Monday, July 3rd, 2006. Coming up on the KBOO News, in Oregon, time's running out for backers of initiative measures that need signatures to get on the ballot. Mexicans voted yesterday in a close race between free marketeer Felipe Calderon and populist López Obrador. The results are not in, but both candidates have declared victory. North Korea says that any U.S. aggression will be met with an annihilating strike. Portland area weather: partly sunny to mostly sunny with some morning clouds. Temperatures in the 80s, low 90s. Tonight, mostly clear. Temperatures in the 50s. Slight chance of being hit by a giant asteroid.
The clock is running down on backers of initiative measures who need to turn in signatures to the State Elections Division by Friday to qualify for Oregon's November 7th ballot. Citizens and special interest groups drafted 165 initiatives, but now it's down to 13 proposals contending to make the ballot. Topics include abortion, campaign finance reform, and a statewide spending limit. This season, petitioners have complained that they are getting denied access to malls and big box stores, where large numbers of people congregate. State elections authorities also have been getting more fussy about what signatures qualify. That's driving down the validity rate of signatures turned in and forcing campaigns to get a larger padding to ensure that they qualify. A 2002 ban on paying signature gatherers by the signature has crimped the supply of professional petitioners. Some campaigns have resorted to sending tens of thousands of petitions through the mail, asking recipients to circulate the sheets among friends and family. Organizers for several campaigns express confidence that their measures will qualify, although some are mounting aggressive efforts in the final week.
An Oregon State professor has hit the road for biodiesel. David Hackelman set off in a Dodge Ram pickup last Thursday running pure biodiesel fuel. He plans a trip to the east to spread the news about a fuel he said could help reduce the nation's reliance on foreign oil and improve the prospects of farmers who grow the raw products that go into biodiesel. Hackelman is the Linus Pauling Endowed Chair of the Chemical Engineering Department at Oregon State University and a retired technology leader at Hewlett-Packard. Hackelman is teaching a science summer program in West Virginia in mid-July. He said the trip is an opportunity to drive cross-country and share the news about biodiesel. He said he'll stop at national parks and places where people are gathered in hopes that his truck and his message will get people interested in asking questions about biodiesel.
State agencies still are tallying the bills, but the public cost of Governor Ted Kulongoski's trade trip to Japan and Korea is estimated at more than $200,000. The trade visit was organized by the Port of Portland and the State Department of Economic and Community Development and included two public-funded receptions and a series of meetings between Kulongoski and Asian business leaders. Of the Oregon contingent, about half came from public entities such as the Ports of Portland and Coos Bay, the State Department of Agriculture, and the Governor's Office. $130,000 out of that $200,000 was used to pay for the ground transportation, receptions, translators, a photographer, gifts, and shipping from the three cities on the trip.
Former vice presidential candidate John Edwards called for withdrawal from Iraq within the next 18 months and for the U.S. government to launch another war on poverty. Edwards was speaking in Portland last Friday at the National Organization of Black Elected Legislative Women's Conference. Edwards couldn't resist a few partisan jabs at the current administration, calling the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina a failure of presidential leadership. His comments drew applause from the largely Democratic conference attendees. They cheered Edwards' calls for a rise in the minimum wage, expansion of earned income tax credits, and expanded regulations for the check cashing industry. Edwards also said it should be easier for workers to join unions.
In Albany, squatters are beginning to move out of Camp Boondoggle in a city park, and in a few days, they expect their home of recent years to be no more. The squatters have been living in a remote park of Simpson Park on land the city acquired under a 1997 grant from a timber company on the condition that it be managed for its natural features. In May, the city said it would evict people from the 17 campsites that featured shelters known as hooches or shanties. Some were wood, some plastic. Some had wood stoves, bookshelves, rocking chairs, rugs, wood floors, and lanterns. One had a propane stove, another a homemade generator for a TV and PlayStation. Some had outhouses. Drinking water came from a store that allowed access after business hours. On Friday, the eviction deadline, city police gave the squatters a few more days to leave.
Bend resident Bessie Lay is 91. She was born in a barn in eastern Washington. As far as her daughter knows, Lay never had a birth certificate, passport, driver's license, or other form of government identification that would prove she's a U.S. citizen. Yet, as of Saturday, Bessie Lay must prove that she's a citizen or lose the $700 a month in Medicaid payments that go to the adult foster care home in Bend where she lives. State and federal officials said it's not likely that Lay will be kicked off Medicaid as a result of the new law designed to discourage illegal immigrants, for undocumented immigrants from getting government benefits. People who are already enrolled in the government program that provides medical coverage for those with low incomes can continue collecting benefits as long as they show a good faith effort that they're trying to locate citizenship documents. Under the new law, a driver's license may not be accepted as proof of citizenship on its own. Recipients must submit documents when they sign up or at local eligibility reviews. This from the Bend News Service.
Waterway managers throughout Oregon are scanning the surface of the state's many lakes this summer, looking for any evidence of the blue-green algae that toxicologists across the country are calling an emerging public health issue. Anabane floss aquae outbreak like the ones that left popular Diamond Lake toxic to humans and pets 3 out of the last 5 summers have become increasingly common in the last few years. The so-called blue-green algae wasn't even on the radar screen 5 years ago when the first big toxic bloom hit Diamond Lake, but it has since become a part of the summer lexicon of lake managers and users who look actively for blooms. The algae can produce toxins that can cause skin rashes or be extremely dangerous, even lethal to children or pets that ingest or inhale it. Algae blooms are a common phenomenon in warm, stagnant, and fertilizer-contaminated waters. Many of the algae look alike, but it is the Anabana strain that produces toxins that can result in rashes, numbness, dizziness, and in extreme cases, death.
A huge asteroid whizzed by Earth early this morning, just slightly farther away than the moon. More than 36 asteroids have flown closer to Earth in the last few years, but scientists believe 2004 XP14 is among the largest. The asteroid discovered in 2004 is estimated to be as wide as a half mile based on its brightness. It's expected to be visible as a small moving dot to amateur sky watchers with good telescopes in North America and as a fainter object in Europe. Its closest approach was over the U.S. West Coast.
Lieutenant Commander Charles Swift, the Navy lawyer who beat the President of the United States in a pivotal Supreme Court battle over trying alleged terrorists, figures he'll probably have to find a new job. Swift compared President Bush to King George III in court. He said President Bush had overstepped his authority when he bypassed Congress and set up illegal military tribunals to try Guantanamo detainees, such as Swift's alleged al-Qaeda client Salim Ahmed Hamdan. The justices agreed, ruling 5-3 Thursday in favor of dismantling the current tribunal system. Despite his spectacular success with the assistance of attorneys from the Seattle firm Perkins Coie, Swift thinks his military career is coming to an end. The 44-year-old Judge Advocate General Officer, who was recently named one of the 100 most influential lawyers in the country by the National Law Journal, was passed over for promotion last year as the high-profile case was making headlines around the world. Swift's future in the Navy now rests with another promotion board that is expected to render its decision in the next couple of weeks. Under the military system, officers need to be promoted at regularly scheduled intervals or their service careers are essentially over. This from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer.
Yeah. cherry wine. They're the one I'm loving. She's sweet just like cherry wine. And every time I see a woman, she makes me think of mine.
Five U.S. Army soldiers are being investigated for allegedly raping a young woman, then killing her and three members of her family in Iraq. The soldiers also allegedly burned the body of the woman they are accused of assaulting in the March incident, the official said, on condition of anonymity because of the sensitivity of the case. Major General James Thurman, commander of coalition troops in Baghdad, had ordered a criminal investigation into the alleged killing of the family of four in Mahmoudiya, south of Baghdad. The case represents the latest allegations against U.S. soldiers stemming from the deaths of Iraqis. At least 14 U.S. troops have been convicted. The United States is also investigating allegations that two dozen unarmed Iraqi civilians were killed by U.S. Marines in the western town of Haditha on November 19th in a revenge attack after one of their own died in a roadside bombing. However, a U.S. official close to the investigation said at least one of the soldiers has admitted his role and has been arrested. The official said the accused soldiers were from the same platoon as the two slain soldiers whose bodies were mutilated. He said the mutilation of the slain soldiers stirred feelings of guilt and led to at least one of them to reveal the rape slaying on June 22nd. The killings appeared to have been a crime of opportunity, the official said. The soldiers had not been attacked by insurgents, but had noticed the woman on previous patrols.
Senator Charles Schumer is urging the review of all the Bush administration's anti-terror programs in the wake of the Supreme Court's decision that military tribunals for Guantanamo detainees violate U.S. and international law. Schumer, a New York Democrat and member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, called for the establishment of an independent commission to scrutinize the president's war on terror. The Supreme Court had ruled 5-3 on Thursday that the president's attempt to use a type of military trial violates U.S. military law and the Geneva Conventions that set international standards for dealing with people captured in armed conflicts. The decision centered on Salim Ahmed Hamdan, a one-time driver for Osama bin Laden, who has spent 4 years in the U.S. prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. He faces a single count of conspiring to commit terrorism. Schumer recommended the commission consist of legal scholars, administration officials, congressional members, and distinguished judges. Schumer said the war on terror can be fought successfully and legally.
According to Raw Story, New York Times columnist Frank Rich has accused the White House and Republican Party of fabricating outrage against his newspaper in order to cover up their own failings in Iraq and elsewhere. Concerning Bill Frist and the flag desecration issue, Rich said, "What really provoked Frist's crocodile tears was the foiling of yet another ruse to distract Americans from the wreckage in Iraq. He and his party, eager to change the subject in an election year, just can't let go of their scapegoat strategy. It's illegal Hispanic immigrants, gay couples seeking martial rights, cut-and-run Democrats, and rampaging flag burners who have betrayed America's values, not those who bungled war," said Rich. No sooner were the flag burners hustled off stage than a new traitor was unveiled for the press. Public enemy number one is the New York Times, which was accused of a, quote, disgraceful, unquote, compromise of national security by President Bush and treason by Representative Peter King of New York and a call to Amen Chorus. Rich wrote that the assault on a free press during our own wartime should be recognized for what it is, another desperate ploy by officials trying to hide their own lethal mistakes in the shadows. It's the antithesis of everything we celebrate with the blazing lights of Independence Day, unquote.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's Homeland Security Agency has tracked anti-war and animal rights protesters, according to the Los Angeles Times. The practice has drawn criticism from the state attorney general, the paper says. California Attorney General Bill Locklear said, "When people exercise their First Amendment rights to rally, march, and protest, they should not have to worry that intelligence officials are watching them or their activities are in any way being painted with a terrorism brush." The paper obtained official reports detailing some of the monitoring, which included the tracking of a rally protesting the slaughter of Canadian seals for fur, an anti-war rally that featured Representative George Miller, Democrat of California, a Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, gathering in support of an anti-war protester facing trespassing charges.
In Trenton, New Jersey, Governor John Corzine signed an executive order on Saturday shutting down the state's government for the first time in its history. Sales of lottery tickets stopped, road construction projects were halted, and roughly 45,000 state employees were put on furlough. The order, a result of an impasse between the governor and the state legislature over the budget for the new fiscal year, began a process in which the state over the next few days may close state parks, 2 state-run beaches, and depending on the outcome of a court case, the 12 Atlantic City casinos. Essential operations like the prisons, the state police, child protection services, and mental hospitals continued to run. But some effects were felt almost immediately. Operations of the Department of Motor Vehicles were suspended when offices around the state closed at noon on Saturday. Courts were to stop all but emergency operations. The holiday weekend cushioned the effects of the executive order on state residents, but because the shutdown was unprecedented, it carried symbolic weight.
Too bad, Mama, that we can't get along. When I think I'm doing right, I'm doing wrong. I keep on drinking, trying to drive my blues away. Well, the sun's gonna shine in my back door.
In Geneva, the chances of a new accord to lower trade barriers across the globe seem more remote than ever, according to the International Herald Tribune. Major World Trade Organization members signaled their failure to make progress during talks and postponed a resumption of serious discussions. The chief U.S. negotiator, Susan Schwab, said countries had clearly reached an impasse. The so-called Doha round of trade talks has already missed a series of deadlines, and the window for reaching a deal is narrowing, with the approach of elections in Brazil, France, and United States likely to have politicians more preoccupied with domestic affairs than global trade issues. Negotiators in New Delhi said India could not be part of any agreement that did not address the development concerns of developing countries, agency France Presse reported. The talks are mainly stuck over agriculture. Before making additional pledges to reduce subsidies and tariffs, the Americans and Europeans are calling on developing countries like India and Brazil to agree to open their markets to more imports of manufactured goods and services. The developing countries want the United States and the European Union to move first.
Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist urged President Bush on Friday to intensify efforts to put interceptor missiles at a site in Europe to protect against potential attacks from Iran. Frist said in a letter to the president, quote, "The time has come to revive and reinvigorate discussions with allies in Europe that have previously expressed interest in hosting these interceptors at a third site on their territory," unquote. The United States has interceptor missiles buried in California and Alaska to counter potential threats from the Pacific, including North Korea. The Bush administration has spent more than a year negotiating with several European allies to find a third site for the ground-based interceptor missiles, including discussions last year with Poland. The U.S. Missile Defense Agency requested $61 million to produce 10 more interceptor missiles and $56 million to prepare for a third site. There's been no final decision on where that site might be, but it's pretty easy to figure out. It actually is rocket science.
A committee of British MPs are saying that the threat to the UK from Al-Qaeda is likely to have increased, and the Iraq War has provided a boost to extremist groups. The latest Foreign Affairs Committee report into the War on Terror found the terror network posed an extremely serious and brutal threat to the UK. One reason was propaganda coming from Iraq, which is a crucial training ground for international terrorists, it said. Committee Chairman Mike Gapes said Al-Qaeda had now broken up into smaller groups, which were harder to trace. The report also argued that too little effort was being put into communicating with the Arab and Islamic world to counter terrorist propaganda. It said the continued existence of Guantanamo Bay Detention Center diminished U.S. moral authority and added to the list of grievances. The MPs called on the government to clarify the objectives for the British troops who were recently deployed in Afghanistan.
Senior British military officers are concerned that continuing fierce fighting in Afghanistan will lead to a drastic drop in domestic public support, which could jeopardize the Army's recent deployment there. The officers are particularly worried about casualties. The enemy are more tenacious and determined than expected, with coalition troops often calling in attack helicopters and airstrikes by jets to extricate them from difficult situations. It's now widely accepted that more servicemen will be killed than had been planned for, something for which the British public is not thought to have been sufficiently prepared. In a briefing in Kabul, Brigadier Ed Butler, one of the most senior army officers in Afghanistan, described UK public opinion as a key strategic factor in the campaign. General Sir Michael Jackson, the Chief of General Staff, made his own concerns privately known in the city last week. The government is aware of the dangers posed by flagging public support. However, early British efforts to, quote, win the hearts and minds in Helmand, unquote, has been compromised by the decision of U.S. military chiefs to involve them in Operation Mountain Thrust, the most aggressive campaign against Taliban strongholds in central Afghanistan for 4 years. This according to The Observer.
On the weekend, Israel struck at the heart of the Palestinian government, hitting the Gaza office of the Hamas prime minister in a new wave of air raids and warning it would use all its power to free a soldier captured by militants a week ago. This according to Agency France Press. The armed wing of Hamas threatened to retaliate by resuming attacks inside Israel, predicting the region would sink into a sea of blood if the Israeli offensive continued. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert vowed his government would not bow to blackmail, as Palestinians caused that Egyptian-led mediation efforts underway to free the captured 19-year-old corporal Gilad Shalit were faltering. In a dramatic new warning to the embattled Palestinian administration, helicopter gunships fired on the office in Gaza overnight of Hamas Premier Ismail Haniyeh, setting the building ablaze. Haniyeh said, "We ask the international community and the Arab League to take its responsibilities toward our people and intervene to end what he called Israel's insane policy." Israeli Deputy Prime Minister Shimon Peres insisted the raid on Haniyeh's office was a shot across the government's bows rather than an assassination bid. Israel, however, has shown no inhibitions with regard to assassination.
Maoist rebels in Nepal have accused the United States of trying to undermine the peace process, according to the BBC. Washington has threatened to withhold aid to Nepal if the rebels join an interim government without giving up their weapons first. U.S. Ambassador James Moriarty said his country considered the Maoists to be terrorists, therefore, despite their ceasefire. Negotiations are underway for the Maoists to join an interim government ahead of elections next year. Maoist leader Prachanda accused the U.S. envoy of not wanting peace in Nepal and of creating an atmosphere of suspicion between the rebels and the governing parties. The Maoists admit to only one killing and said the perpetrator is being punished. While the government has declared an indefinite truce, the rebels have not yet said their ceasefire will last beyond late July. This from the BBC.
According to the BBC, the Indian government is giving aid worth nearly $815 million to crisis-hit cotton farmers in the western state of Maharashtra. Prime Minister Manmohan Singh announced the package after a two-day tour of the Vidarbha region, which has seen cotton crop failure and falling prices. Hundreds of farmers have committed suicide in Maharashtra in recent years. Under the package, farmers will have debts cleared and will get access to seeds and interest-free loans. Projects for improving irrigation and support for families who cannot survive on farming alone are also included. Similar packages will be drawn up for the states of Andhra Pradesh, Kerala, and Karnataka, which have also seen a wave of suicide among farmers. Estimates for the overall number of deaths among farmers in the four states since 2001 range up to 18,000 people. Singh said that meeting the families of farmers who had committed suicide, as well as others who were reeling under heavy debt, had left a deep impression on his mind.
Tens of thousands of people have joined a rally in Hong Kong calling for a full democracy in the territory. Organizers say 58,000 people took part. Police put the figure at 28,000. The marchers, some blowing whistles, carried banners reading, "Justice, Equality, Democracy." The rally marked the ninth anniversary of the former British colony's return to Chinese rule. Under Hong Kong's electoral system, its leader is chosen by an 800-member committee weighed in Beijing's favor. It also has a 60-seat legislature, half of whose members are directly elected. In 2003 and 2004, crowds of up to 500,000 took to the streets of Hong Kong to demand full democracy. But BBC correspondents say the numbers have fallen as the economy is doing well and new leader Donald Tsang is proving to be popular.
Chinese President Hu Jintao has opened the world's highest railway, describing it as a magnificent feat. The Qinghai-Tibet line boasts high-tech engineering to stabilize tracks over permafrost and sealed cabins to protect passengers from the high altitude. China says the 710-mile line will bring major opportunities to a poor region, but critics fear it will be used by China to assert its control over a contested border region. They also said the railway line threatens not only the delicate Himalayan environment, but also the ancient Tibetan culture. Hu cut a red ribbon before the first train left Gomans in China's Qinghai province, carrying 900 passengers to the Tibetan capital, Lhasa. He said it showed China's people were ambitious, self-confident, and capable of standing among the world's advanced nations. On Friday, three foreign activists were briefly detained at Beijing's Central Railway Station on Friday after unfurling a banner that read, "China's Tibet Railway, designed to destroy." In parts, the train line has been built on bridges elevated above the most unstable permafrost. Elsewhere, cooling pipes have been sunk into the ground to ensure it remains frozen to stabilize the tracks. This, according to the BBC.
Two bitter rivals declared themselves winners of Mexico's extraordinarily close presidential race, even though official results wouldn't be ready for days, sparking cries of fraud from supporters and fears of violence. The two candidates were separated by fewer than 400,000 votes, with more than 36 million counted in a preliminary tally by electoral officials. The conservative Felipe Calderon had 36.6% to populist Andrés Manuel López Obrador's 35.5%, according to results from 91% of the polling places. But the Federal Electoral Institute stressed those results weren't final and said it wouldn't declare a victor until an official count due to start Wednesday. In the meantime, both candidates declared victory, raising questions about their pledges to respect an electoral process in which Mexicans invested hundreds of millions of dollars to overcome decades of systematic fraud.
The people of Bolivia are voting for members of a new constituent assembly that will draft a new constitution. They are also being asked to decide whether the country's nine provinces should be given greater autonomy. The country has already seen radical change since President Evo Morales took office in January. He has nationalized the oil and gas industries, begun redistributing land, cut public sector salaries, and hopes to promote some legal uses of coca leaves. Some have called the changes in Bolivia a democratic revolution, but whatever it is, Evo Morales appears determined to continue with the radical reforms he has been implementing in what is the poorest country in South America. Voters are being asked to choose 255 members of a new constituent assembly. They will meet in August and spend between 6 months and 1 year drawing up a new draft constitution that will then be voted on by the people. If President Morales's party wins a majority, he will continue with the reforms he has been implementing since he took office. They include plans to give a greater voice to the majority indigenous population, tighter state control of the economy, and more transparency in the political system. This from the BBC.
North Korea is ready to answer a preemptive U.S. military attack with an annihilating strike and a nuclear war. The Korean Central News Agency, citing an unidentified Rodong Sinmun newspaper analyst, accused the United States of increasing military pressure on the isolated communist state. The North Korean threat of retaliation, which is often voiced by its state-controlled media, comes amid U.S. official reports that Pyongyang has shown signs of preparing for a test of a long-range missile.
Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez is calling on Africa to forge closer ties with Latin America to combat what he called a threat of U.S. hedge money. Chavez encouraged members at an African Union summit to cooperate with Latin America in everything from oil production to university education to counter colonial meddling in developing nations. Citing the example of Venezuela and Bolivia, he urged Africa to seize greater control of its energy resources. He described the low royalty payments made by some foreign oil companies as robbery. Africa's abundant natural resources, ranging from precious metals to iron ore and oil, should make it a wealthy continent if it were freed from outside exploitation, Chavez said. In a nod to another outspoken opponent of U.S. foreign policy, Chavez hailed Iran's right to develop nuclear technology for peaceful purposes, this according to Reuters. This has been the KBOO Morning News for Monday, July 3rd, 2006. Thanks for listening. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Our engineer is Steve and Jeff. KBOO volunteers edited and produced some of the taped stories you heard today. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Jake Wallner.
And I'm Chris Andre.
We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge on translator K246AA, and 100.7 in the Willamette Valley on translator K220HR. If you'd like to volunteer and have a heck of a lot of fun with us in the AM newsroom, call Kathleen Stevenson. Get your pen, 503-231-8032, extension 202, or send us an email at amnews@kboo.org. Portland area weather, partly sunny to mostly sunny with some morning clouds. Temperatures in the 80s. Tonight, mostly clear. Temperatures in the 50s. Slight chance of being hit by a giant asteroid. Coming up, your handmade, homegrown, all-natural, free-range community radio. Thanks for listening. We'll see you at the Blues Fest.
Wednesday, July 5th, Alternative Radio returns to the KBOO airwaves with the classic lecture, Super Patriotism, by analyst and author Michael Parenti.
We real patriots say, along with Albert Camus, I want to love my country and justice too. And in fact, I believe that the only way you can be a real patriot is to love justice. Because you can't love, you can't be patriotic to something that's unjust.
That's Michael Parenti speaking about super patriotism on Alternative Radio, returning to KBOO every Wednesday at noon, beginning July 5th.
Road?
Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road.
Coming to the KBOO radio airwaves Monday, July 3rd at 11 p.m. The Capitalist Manifesto meets the Wizard of Oz.
George W. Bush is the scarecrow without a brain.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
The rest of his administration are the heartless tin woodsmen, and the Democrats are the cowardly lions who lack a spine.
The UBU Hour Radio Theater Show brings you the Capitalist Manifesto.
Meets the Wizard of Oz.
Coming to the KBOO airwaves Monday, July 3rd at 11 p.m.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.